Indiana is going to court over unemployment. The Affordable Care Act survives another legal challenge, plus teachers' unions sue over a new law, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 18th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
Indiana legal groups are taking the state to court over its decision to end federal unemployment benefits at the end of this week. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports they say the state is violating its own law, which says it must give citizens all rights and benefits of federal laws.
Plaintiffs include the concerned clergy of Indianapolis and several Hoosiers affected by the state's decision. In court documents, several say lack of child care or ongoing quarantines mean they'll likely be evicted without federal benefits. Department of Workforce Development data shows the end of federal benefits would impact around 160,000 Hoosiers, with almost 80% of them losing all unemployment benefits. Jennifer Terry of Indiana Legal Services is an attorney representing plaintiffs. She says they're also asking the judge for an injunction that would temporarily halt the state's ability to end federal benefits.
At this point, we don't know when that hearing on the preliminary injunction might occur, but we hope that it will happen fast.
Is this lawsuit going to succeed? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Joey Fox. John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is this lawsuit the way forward on these unemployment benefits?
Well, I don't think that the people whose unemployment benefits were terminated so abruptly have any choice. The statute says what the statute says, and that's that Hoosiers are entitled to all benefits that the federal government provides. This was done by the governor in knee-jerk reaction to the right wing of his party to show that he really is closer to Trump. And it is unfortunate because a lot of these people are not back to work for legitimate reasons. They may have issues of where they live. They may have issues of a family member with a condition that they're concerned about COVID and they can't get vaccinated. I mean, there are lots of different reasons for this. The law already requires them to show that they're trying to get jobs, okay? And so that's already there, and it should be there. That's a good thing. But terminating this in violation of the Indiana Code was not only not thought through. I mean, Indiana's always been a donor state. We never get back from the federal government what we pay in to the federal government. This was an opportunity to put millions of dollars into the state economy to make things bounce back even faster after the COVID lockdown, and they just turned their backs on it for ideological reasons, and it's really a mistake, and it harms people, legitimately harms people. It doesn't legitimately harm, it harms legitimate people in a way that is so unfortunate and so unthinking that it ought to be overturned.
The governor, not just today, but talking today, was asked about ending those unemployment benefits, and he said there are 100,000 jobs unfilled in the state of Indiana right now. There are programs that you can go through to the state to get training to apply for those jobs. Do we need this lawsuit to reinstate these benefits for a few months?
So I think you got to go back to the context in which these benefits were added. At that time, right, we were under pandemic. We didn't understand. The government itself was forcing businesses to close. There was a legitimate need for extreme measures. And if you recall how quickly these things were passed at the federal level, I mean, this was kind of a one-size-fits-all, let's go. We just got to get people money, right? But now we're not there. And so if we're following the data, when our unemployment rate is coming back, we've got employers who can't hire people. They're competing with wages of unemployment. And so now, if the situation is not informed by COVID, it's time to end some of these COVID-related programming now so that we can fully get the economy back on track.
And force people back into minimum wage jobs with no benefits because they don't want to raise the pay. Great idea.
If you want to have a discussion about what unemployment should look like in the future, what these programs should do, whether or not you should be able to not take available jobs and still get those benefits, that's fine.
But they're looking for jobs.
What we're trying to do though is take a program. You're stealing a base on the argument of just saying, oh well, it's here. Let's just keep it because that'll fulfill some long-term policy goal of mine, rather than actually having the debate, which I think you would lose.
There was
a lot of focus. There was a lot of focus on the part of the federal unemployment benefits during COVID that gave more money to people who would otherwise have gotten regular unemployment. But these benefits go beyond that. There's the extension beyond the 26 weeks for unemployment benefits for most unemployed Hoosiers. But there's also, importantly, a brand new kind of unemployment benefit for those who are self-employed, gig economy workers, which there are increasingly more of as the gig economy strengthens across the country. Asked today about that, the governor said, I'm only barely paraphrasing here, if you had a job or started a business before COVID, pre-pandemic, and it's not available anymore, you just have to find a new job. Is that a good answer?
Probably not for the people who don't have those jobs and are not able to find jobs for which they have the appropriate skills in their communities. We're all assuming here the argument that for cutting off the benefits assumes that there's some direct correlation between a suspension of benefits and those people instantly checking a box and overnight becoming employees at these companies that are screaming for jobs. As we've discussed before, a lot of unemployment is in communities and parts of the state where nobody's hiring. So do we have a program whereby not just job skills, but are we going to pay to move people from southern Indiana, rural areas where there is no manufacturing base anymore, where there is no kind of economic infrastructure the way you would find in, say, Indiana, central Indiana, or in Indianapolis? I doubt it.
But aren't all of those arguments that we would have been having before these kind of extreme benefits that had to happen because the government had to shut the economy down?
Well, the gig economy
clearly is an argument that probably,
in the absence of COVID,
should have taken place because our economy is shifting, and it's going to change even more so because a lot of people are saying, go back to work. I mean, not paycheck, but go back to a traditional office setting. Forget it. It's not what I want anymore.
Let me ask you the question this way, which is, that discussion that was just had is a legitimate discussion. It was a legitimate discussion before the pandemic. It will continue to be now that the pandemic is winding down, let's say. But these federal unemployment benefits were available through for a few more months. They were gonna end no matter what. So why not just let them run out naturally instead of cutting it off prematurely?
Well, obviously, we've talked about the politics of it
and
how, you know, Republicans feel that that is what is stopping people from taking a job. And I'm not saying that is not occurring anecdotally in some people. But I do think that for a lot more people, the calculation is different. I just think we should take this time to actually, because regardless if we get three more months of this thing, those programs, those protections are ending. We need to figure out how to get people connected to those jobs where they live. And also, I do think it's fair to say that some people, I see things online all the time, they'll say, tell me where I can find a job that's not in a factory or a restaurant. And it's like, well, that's where the jobs are.
Yeah. All right. Well, the Affordable Care Act survived another legal challenge this week as the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on the federal health care law. Obamacare, which has now been upheld by the nation's high court three times, has helped ensure health care coverage for hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers since it was enacted more than a decade ago. The Supreme Court's latest decision threw out a challenge to the law on the grounds that Texas and other objecting GOP-dominated states were not required to pay anything under the mandate provision and thus had no standing to bring the challenge to court. The mandate, the most controversial provision of the law, required that people either buy health insurance or pay a penalty. In 2017, Congress got rid of the penalty after the Congressional Budget Office concluded that the law would continue to function effectively without it. Indiana is one of the states that joined Texas in this latest challenge to Obamacare. Joey Fox, do you think Hoosiers are tired of or support the constant Republican attacks on the Affordable Care Act?
Look, I mean, the Affordable Care Act was shoved through by Democrats only in 2009. Democrats took a huge beating in several election cycles for it. However, we're now in 2021. I think the focus and our energy really should be spent on what we do now. Because the big problem now we have are private employers around the state paying absolutely exorbitant prices for health care. The Affordable Care Act, I think, objectively expanded access to care. It didn't do much for either quality or affordability. And I think those are the issues now that we have to tackle. I think there are market-driven reforms that we could do to implement to help make sure that on the private side, right now we have private employers that essentially their health coverage for their employees is subsidizing reimbursement for Medicare and Medicaid. In all of these programs, and it's getting absolutely out of control, especially in Indiana, and I think that's where we need to focus.
I'm glad to think that you would support a government option for people to lower those prices.
I don't think that's a really good move on your part.
That is not what I said.
I want to ask you this question. So I've heard Joey's not the only Republican that I've heard from who says, you know, we need to focus not on assailing and getting rid of the Affordable Care Act on its own. We need to figure out what's next. How do we? So much has been dismantled already.
But let me ask you this question.
I feel like a lot of Republicans are stuck on we need to kill Obamacare. No, but a lot of Democrats are stuck on we need to defend Obamacare, when really don't we need more solutions that go further than Obamacare?
I think that whatever that looks like. President Biden said that we need to build on that and go forward. And we're covering almost 500,000 Hoosiers with that. And 31 million people in the country are under Obamacare. Do we have to make it better? Yes. The problem has been the Republicans have thwarted every attempt to do that. Okay? So, I mean, if they want to get serious about building on it and stop the ridiculous, attacks on it, then you have that Todd Rokita out there saying this isn't the end of it. He's going to attack it again. So, you know, it has to stop, and they have to come up with some ideas. Remember, we were going to have repeal and replace? Remember that? That was the first thing that Trump was going to do. Have we heard an idea out of the Republicans on how to build on that? No, we haven't.
All we have heard from the Democrats
are not ideas.
It's just the more government giveaways that will lead to less choice and fewer options for people in this country.
We need to go forward with what we're going to do on that. And obviously, the public option is one way to do it.
When we've discussed this lawsuit that just finally was resolved before, we heard from Senator Mike Braun, from Senator Todd Young, who about differing levels of support for the lawsuit because it was, well, if it goes away, so does all of this access. We need a replacement. As she mentioned, Todd Young is not done trying to strike down the Affordable Care Act.
I think Todd Rokita.
Did I say Todd Young? Thank you. Todd Rokita, very different people.
Somebody just did a double take.
Very different people. My apologies to Senator
Those
Young.
And
I think Attorney you General should apologize.
Rokita, and then Attorney General Rokita. But is that a problem that if Republicans get a majority in the Senate or the House at some point in the next year or 2 years or 4 years, do they have to address what do we replace this with in case eventually one of these lawsuits does succeed?
I'm hoping we move past the repeal and replace. I'm hoping that very smart people, smarter than me, who understand market forces out there, will now start looking at things like you said, affordability, because, you know, we've seen in this pandemic, for instance, we've given free vaccines to people, you know, all across, but yet you still are paying insane prices for life-saving insulin and things like that. Like, there are ways for us to improve the healthcare situation. If we would just stop fighting about that and, like focus forward, I really hope we do.
From a Republican standpoint, in Indiana, is it still good politics to assail the Affordable Care Act?
It's probably in Indiana. It's probably, certainly, it reminds me of the old late night. It wasn't a sketch. Somebody went out with a microphone early in the Affordable Care Act's debate or passage and said, do you favor the Affordable Care Act? People are like, oh, yeah, that's what we need. How about Obamacare? No, that's communism. Yeah. So clearly we still have a lot of that. This is not about health care and about how to move forward as a society protecting our most vulnerable. No, it's about, just like COVID has become it's just a front for a bigger issue about the polarization of America. So, but probably going against Obamacare in Indiana is still a political win. But I think the Affordable right, but I do think the Affordable Care Act here in most states has become seen as a positive. And we saw that in the last, I doubt as many Democrats as were running on the Affordable Care Act across the country would have done so if they thought it was a negative. Yeah. As to the question, will this go away simply because now the courts have dealt with it three times, I would point out when you have people with such strong opinions, one court decision, two court decision, three negative court decisions doesn't necessarily stifle the discussion as Roe v. Wade, which had a 35-year head start on the Affordable Care Act decision, proves quite well that...
God, I hope we're not talking about the Affordable Care Act 35 years
from now.
But to
be fair, Roe v. Wade was... it was a Supreme Court interpretation.
That's
right.
As opposed to
different than a physical law
yeah,
that was passed.
All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Eismiller email and text alerts. This week's question: will the Affordable Care Act eventually be struck down by the courts? A yes or B no. Last week's question: should Indiana's new Secretary of Commerce also keep his leadership role at the private company he founded? Just 10% of you say yes. 90%. Say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, three Indiana teachers' unions are suing the state over a new law they say violates teachers' constitutional rights to free speech. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports the law requires teachers to opt in every school year to have their union dues automatically deducted from their paychecks.
The complaint filed in a federal district court states the new law would interfere in existing collective bargaining contracts between unions and school districts. Plaintiffs say the new authorization process will be an onerous burden on teachers, schools, and unions. Groups who advocated for passage of the contentious law in the General Assembly say it gives teachers more rights by allowing them opportunities for them to opt out of union dues. They also pushed for a provision, now law, that tells teachers in large, bold font they do not have to join the union.
John Schwannis, is opting in every year really that big a burden?
I suppose not. We do a lot of things once a year or more frequently as a society. But this issue is about more than that. Like everything we're talking about today, it's not just about, you know, going
this
online
little,
and
this,
clicking
this
a box.
Law, right.
It's about weakening just... And ideally, if you're opposed to the union, dismantling or undercutting or eviscerating a union that has been largely seen as a powerful supporter of Democratic causes and Democratic candidates. And this, again, nothing just happens in Indiana. I hate to tell you. This has happened in every state. This has been part of the playbook probably back to the contract with America in 1994, Newt Gingrich. If it wasn't in his original contract, I'm sure it was floating around in his head. As states across the country have done this sort of thing. Frankly, I thought this was effectively already done years ago. When this came rose back, I thought, gee, I thought that had been dealt with, because this is an issue I remember the debate taking place more than a decade ago. This is adding, I guess, another layer in terms of the complexity of having to renew. But again, let's keep in mind, this is not about record keeping, the ability to remind yourself, like you're changing the batteries in your smoke detector once a year. It's not, or change your, you know, daylight saving time. This is about more than that. Yeah. So when you, it's hard to ask a question simply like, is it a lot to ask? You got to look at it in the broader context of what it symbolizes.
Because the General Assembly's been, I'd say, nibbling around the edges of these sorts of issues more than just this session, right?
Yeah, and to be fair, they didn't even try to hide it this year. They were just like, we are going straight at teachers' unions, not a steelworker union, not a pipe fitters union, only teachers. And our small government Republicans even, you know, put in that law like they it has to be in 14-point bold type that they have to be able to see that they are allowed to, you know, to back down. I thought when we did Right to Work, we were told by supporters that this was fairness, and apparently that wasn't enough. We just keep going at it, and it is impossible to see that they aren't targeting teachers just straight on.
You're a lawyer. Help me draw a line for me from I have to opt in to have these things automatically deducted to a burden on my free speech, because that as a non-lawyer, that doesn't make sense to me.
Okay, well, what this is all about is the Red for Ed and the demonstrations that teachers brought to the attention of the voters, the fact that teachers in this state were being grossly underpaid under the Republicans for the last 10 years, and they're being punished for doing that. They're being punished. That's what this is. It has nothing to do with opting in or anything else. They just want to make them suffer. and they want to make them suffer by making it more difficult to have any meaningful information from the union to the employees because they want to restrict the amount of money. It's not just simply that you have to opt in. Then you have to be sent an email, and then you have to respond to the email, and it has to happen every year, okay? Nobody else does that. Nobody else does that. It's done because they're punishing the teachers for pointing out the fact that they have been left behind in terms of salary from the state by the Republicans.
Nikki makes the point that this is not about every union. It's just about the teachers' union. Is it hard to argue, then, that they are just targeting teachers' unions?
So what Nikki said, too, is they're going after teachers. And I think that it's important to know that we're going after the teachers' unions. Zoom out.
Does that make it better? Does that make it better?
Sure. Zoom out for just a second. In the last year, has there been a group of organizations that have been worse for kids in the United States of America than teachers' unions?
Yeah, the Republican Party.
And specifically for kids, for organizations that have alleged to be so progressive, that have been worse for kids of color, poor kids, disabled kids around the country.
Based on what?
When, even when the science didn't support their position, they have actively around the country tried to keep schools closed opposing parents' ability to choose another school for their folks. I just don't think it's that big of an ask to check a box.
Would Republicans have the same enthusiasm for severing the ties between, say, first responders and law enforcement and the FOP and other things? There are some unions probably that Republicans are willing to say they're good, and some they're willing to say they're bad. And there's, in my mind, a direct correlation about whether those unions are seen as backers of Democrats generally
you can look at who's looking out for the interest of kids and who's looking out for the interest
I want to get to our other topic,
which is the Indianapolis Business Journal reported this week that Rolls-Royce plans to vacate about two-thirds of its downtown Indianapolis campus in favor of a long-term remote work model. Sources told IBJ that the UK-based aircraft engine manufacturer plans to give up 270,000 square feet of office space on the campus that pre-pandemic housed about 3,000 employees. It will be several weeks before the plans are finalized. IBJ reported that one of its sources said it will be difficult for the company that owns the property to find a single user for even one of the buildings Rolls-Royce will vacate. Nikki Kelly, if you're in any metropolitan area of Indiana, how concerned are you about what this might signal for other companies?
I mean, maybe a little, but I got to be honest, that's the first sort of large announcement like that we've heard. Anecdotally, everyone in my life is going back to the office because while we have proved that we can do it, I think a lot of people have also looked at the pros of being in the office, your ability to in-person collaborate, your focus is just, you know, straighter and keener when you're in the office than, you know, with a cat nibbling at your feet or your kid once fed, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'm not too worried yet. I was surprised by this one, though.
When Eli Lilly unveiled its return to work plan, we talked on this show about sort of what that would signal for other companies as they were looking at sort of these corporate leaders and going, okay, that's what they're doing. How should we tailor our plans kind of around that? Is this going to be a model for other companies?
Well, I think a lot of companies are seeing that these sorts of models are attractive to current employees and especially to potential hires. So I think a hybrid model, if not an out-and-out remote work model, will be dangled as a carrot by a lot of companies in Indiana and elsewhere as an incentive or an inducement to come work here in this enlightened atmosphere. And keep in mind, even though there's a blow in terms of not having physical space that everybody converged on, you have less demand on the roads and infrastructure and wear and tear. I mean, there are some upsides in terms of the community, in terms of savings as well. Now, it's not.
Yeah,
it's
but
not
there are
direct,
a lot of downsides if you're a restaurant in downtown Indianapolis, for instance. But if you're Rolls-Royce, I got to imagine you're looking at this and going, well, our employees can work from home, and how much money are we going to save on rent?
That's right. All right, the real estate market, you're looking at kind of what's happening with housing, right, where from what I understand, downtown, is, you know, the core of downtown isn't quite as hot, you know, as where the suburbs are, because now we've been selling, you can walk to work, you can walk to the park, all that. Well, Now you can live in the suburbs, and you don't have that necessity for being here. It's going to be, I hate the word disruptive, but it's going to be disruptive. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, but is this going to be a problem that metropolitan downtowns are going to have to tackle?
I think it could be. We'll have to wait and see for sure, but, you know, you have so much building downtown for apartments and all that, you know, that space could be used like another bottle works or some other thing like that to draw people downtown, even if they're working in their own apartment. They still might like that.
The problem with some of that is going to be planning it out is you're going to have to, I mean, it's going to take a while for this all to sort of settle before you can start making those sorts of decisions.
No, that's true, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, buckle up because that's the next couple of years, I suppose. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Joey Fox, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, as a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.